Christian Esguera, and welcome to this episode of After the Fact, where we get to see things more clearly and we get a better sense of the truth. Let's start by dissecting the news.
The effect would be to kill the application of the franchise.
On July 10, 2020, moments after congressmen voted to reject ABS-CBN's application for a new broadcast franchise, one congressman wanted to make the decision even clearer. Yes, congressmen led by then Speaker Alan Peter Cayetano had indeed killed the franchise bill, although the legislative euphemism was, quote, laid on the table. But even the pejorative preferred so condescendingly by certain congressmen was probably inadequate. Because what took place that afternoon in the halls of Congress in the middle of the pandemic was murder. A murder of a franchise, premeditated to fulfill the desire of President Duterte using the superior force, first of the National Telecommunications Commission and later the House Committee on Legislative Franchises. It could be said that the odds were clearly stacked against ABS-CBN from the very start. Duterte had repeatedly made it clear in public statements he would shut down ABS-CBN. Now, given the political realities in this country, where the lower house is generally subservient to the sitting president, it was no surprise that he got his wish. The decision was clearly a blow to press freedom. It was cruel, especially to thousands of ABS-CBN workers who lost their jobs not because of the pandemic, but because of their government. Tonight, we'll look back on how Duterte killed ABS-CBN's franchise and the continuing struggle by the press to be free under his regime. Now, be part of our discussion. Send us your questions and comments on our YouTube live chat or tweet us using the hashtag ANCAfterTheFact. Joining us tonight, first Philippine Daily Inquirer columnist and journalist, veteran journalist, John Neri. Also with us is another veteran journalist, the former chairperson of the National Union of Journalists of the Philippines, Ms. Inday Espina Varona. Good evening, Ms. Inday, and good evening, John, thank you for joining us on the program.
Good evening, Christian.
Okay, before we talk about the bigger issue of press freedom here, I'd like to spend a few minutes of our discussion to talk about one of our colleagues who passed away recently, the brother of Inday, Mr. Nonoy Espina, former chairperson of the National Union of Journalists of the Philippines. I think it's only incumbent for all of us to look back on his contributions, how much he had given to the cause of press freedom here in the Philippines, especially since Duterte took office in 2016. I'd like to hear from you first, Inday.
Si Nonoy, sabihin na natin, you know, he's been fighting for decades, you know, even as a very, very young adult during the time of the last few years of the Marcos dictatorship and all the way through different administrations. But I think he was really tested during the time of Duterte, not just because he became the NUJP's chairman, but also because this particular administration, of course, did not stint on attacking journalists that they thought were critical to them. No? Christian, in the last year, Nonoy didn't like, he would report stuff. He didn't like to talk about threats personally. You know, he'd talk about red tagging about that. But there was a very real fear within the family and even Nonoy, because there were persistent reports from friends within the security establishment that said, ingat ka. And as you know, Nonoy was based in Bacolod City, in Negros Occidental, where there have been a flood of killings over the last 2 years. So it was very serious. And some relatives and a few siblings had told him, can you tone it down a little? You know, not because they thought it was wrong, but because everybody feared for him. But he was very, very firm on that. And he said, silence is exactly what they want from us, and that's not going to happen, but he said, not during his watch. But even kahit sa harap ng challenges, Christian, as everybody know, Nonoy was this guy who everybody loved to have as company because pilit pa rin siyang he managed to have fun. He managed to fill his world and other people's world with laughter. And I think he balanced it until the end of his life. Dalawa yan eh. There were only two things that really consumed him, music and the causes dear to his heart.
Including press freedom. John,
especially
like about,
press freedom.
Yeah, John, I'd like to talk about this, his contribution specifically in the struggle for press freedom under Duterte. He was a staple in rallies whenever it was possible before the pandemic. But even during the pandemic, he was consistently pushing the envelope and in also trying to gather journalists, put them behind a single cause. At that time, not just ABS-CBN, also regarding Rappler and the Philippine Daily Inquirer. John.
Yes, I was really saddened to hear of his passing. Si Noy talagang kasama ng marami, no? In the fight for press freedom. I think that it's it was providential that he was named NUJP chair in 2018. So he served from 2018 to early 2021. And these are the worst years of the Duterte regime. And he was right there pushing back against his regime. On a maybe somewhat trivial note, I want to pay tribute to his statement writing skills. It's very difficult to write something strong, something to the point, and something quick whenever there is an issue. But he had that gift. I know because I tried my hand at it, it's very difficult. It mukhang sa kanya ang ano. So ang daming there were so many statements from NUJP that came out very, very strong, but also at the right time. But beyond that, he supported many other initiatives. Like you said, he was right there when the Inquirer came under attack, when Rappler came under attack, Verify Us, PCIJ, every initiative to push back, he was there. He brought both NUJP and his own self to the fight. So actually, dalawang araw, it's been 2 days since I've been reading everything that I could about him. Tapos I think that maybe the one really good way to describe him, I know he had a gift for music. He loved his family so much. And yet one of the descriptions for him, I think, that best describes him is he was a fighter. He was very simpatico, very compassionate. As Inday said, you know, people liked having him around. But he was a fighter. That's why there's also an outpouring of grief from many journalists. Some of them you would not even expect it, no? Tapos parang they have been so moved by working with Nonoy.
Okay, if I may share also, sure. I remember last year, even before the call for press freedom snowballed, mm-hmm. I remember Nonoy was the one who was pushing who pushed for the Black Friday protest, right? As early as
February
last year.
That's
when
right.
many journalists were still reluctant, if not That's afraid, right. to fight for press freedom, including those from ABS-CBN. I remember him with a handful of NUJP members and a handful of other journalists, less than 10, less than 20, at the Welcome Rotonda, dito sa may Timog Rotonda, Boy Scout Circle.
Yeah, Rosas.
Oh,
that's right.
I remember we were having conversations about what we had to do as an industry, not just as part of one particular organization, and he was very passionate about it, no? So I think this can also help us somehow transition to the discussion for tonight, because tomorrow is the first anniversary. It's no cause for celebration. 1 year since the sycophants in Congress, the allies of President Duterte voted to reject the application for a new broadcast franchise by ABS-CBN. first, let's try to put things in perspective, clarify things, because there have been a lot of misconceptions and fake news and disinformation about this issue. I'd like to talk about them first, Inday. What would you consider were the most vicious propaganda used by this administration to somehow help justify the shutdown of ABS-CBN back then?
Maraming tinapon, ano? But I understand. One of the most ludicrous attacks happened during the time when people were already galvanized, because probably they realized, oops, it's really dangerous, when people were starting to coalesce and show support for ABS-CBN and demanding that it be allowed to extend its franchise. Then suddenly, ano sinabi ng gobyerno? The outrage was a communist ploy, which was really the kind of weird logic that you'd expect from them. But it's not there. I think what really struck me was, I think this was towards the end na, and this is the kind of lying and the kind of the sheer gall and display of injustice and entitlement that they had. When I heard Marcoleta, after a parade of government experts whom they called had cleared ABS-CBN issue after issue after issue, in the end he said, it doesn't matter what this agency says or what that the agency or body says, it's our will. And you know, and while they do have exclusive power to grant a franchise, I thought, but like, you swore on the Constitution that you would do your duty. And I saw that it was practically hopeless, that this was a this was an institution that was beholden to only one man, their master Duterte.
So even then, you were holding on to a semblance of trustworthiness that the congressmen would actually do their jobs and would be independent of Malacañang?
No, but I was hoping for a more, you know, I was just going to see, ano ang sasabihin, how are you going to justify this? But it was that brazen display of power that just said, you know, it has nothing to do with rights, it has nothing to do with blame or lack of guilt. This has all to do with what we want. And I thought that was just very powerful.
Okay, John, your thoughts on this? And also perhaps, did you expect this to be this blatant?
First of all, I did not expect them, going into 2020, I did not expect them to actually pull the trigger. So I was surprised when the cease and desist order came out. But when that came out, I knew that the entire landscape had changed. We all got an inkling that they were serious about shutting down when, in one of the outrages committed by this administration, the Solicitor General filed a co-warranto case against ABS-CBN. Because he had succeeded with the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, he thought maybe he can do it with the largest TV network. But when the cease and desist order came out in May, I think the entire landscape changed. People like me, who are a bit more optimistic, rather more skeptical that such a large network would be shut down, suddenly felt that they had already decided. I agree with Inday, though, that the greatest outrage was the conduct of the congressmen, especially the three that I gave the name Marder, no? Marcoleta, Defensor, and Revilla. Remulla, Marder Inc. And when, after all the testimonies over 12 hearings of the different government agencies, Marcoleta says, but it is the will of Congress that must be accorded respect. Parang yun, garapalan. At that point, I no longer expected them to be subtle about it. I mean, after all, they follow the dictates of someone who of a president who says the quiet part out loud. So maybe it was too much to expect them to also do that. But considering that so many of us were following what was happening, and then for them to say that, talagang bastusan. Okay.
It's all about the cast of characters, or perhaps from the perspective of the press freedom fighters, the Rose Gallery of people who were behind the shutdown of ABS-CBN. Number one, let's talk about President Duterte himself, the biggest elephant in the room. Because remember, even before the hearings were conducted, his propagandists had already been saying that, well, the president had nothing to do with that. Okay, he was not pushing for any shutdown whatsoever. He was just ventilating his sentiments, which was valid because that's part of a freedom of expression. Now, let's put this in perspective, Inday. So, it's President Duterte, right? And how did he get away with this?
I guess the same way he got away with a lot of things. There was one time, just even before the NTC order, somebody within ABS asked me, "How do you think this is going to go?" And I said, I was even then pessimistic. And I said, Duterte has turned around on a lot of his campaign promises. On one thing, he has been consistent, making good his threats against perceived enemies. And when we talk of ABS-CBN, we need to look at it this way. Bago pa gumawa yan, nangako si Duterte. He promised, I am going to, the same way he promised Kapler, I'm going to kill, in figuratively, that station. You better sell it because you're not going to get your franchise, etc. And he did say this once. I said, said it twice. And so during the Congress, we have, his Malacanang spokespeople trying to wash their hands, and especially after the franchise was denied, saying, but he had nothing to do with this. This was a purely congressional thing. And yet right after that, hindi pa nangandalakan pa si Duterte. He went to Mindanao and he was like boasting.
And Malacanang spliced this statement.
I know. And then he said, ginawa namin ang sinabi ko. And that's just the kind of brute power that he exercises against his enemies. And when we talk about the attack on ABS-CBN, it can't be anything else but an attack on press freedom, a political attack against an enemy, and on that scale also against the country.
Okay, John, pardon me for restating a question, the answer to which is quite obvious. Can the president really disengage himself from what the congressman technically and officially did to ABS-CBN?
Well, no. I agree with what you said at the start of the show. This was legislative murder, but with the chief executive as mastermind. We all know that. The congressmen know that. Reporters covering the House, they know that. Even the spokespersons of the president who say he had nothing to do with it, they know that. So he's been very consistent, as Inday said. Over the years, he's been threatening ABS-CBN. Yes, it's part of a pattern against perceived enemies, especially in the media, but he also had a special axe to grind against ABS-CBN, of which he was he used to be a talent. He had a radio show for a long time with a radio station in Davao. But really, there is no separating his intent, which he made clear before, and then which he made clear right after. Inde again was referring to the time when he went to Holosulu, and the president said, without naming the Lopezes, I just got rid of the oligarchy. The enemies of the people, and so on and so forth. He was gloating. In fact, his point of comparison was Marcos. He did not have to declare martial law, he said, in order to get at the oligarchy. He was really on a high a few days after the rejection of the franchise.
Okay, on hindsight, that was quite clear already that the president had been bent on shutting down ABS-CBN. But also on hindsight, they think we could have done more, let's say as journalists, as an industry, in diverse. Yeah.
It's hard not to say. I would have wished, personally, I would have wished that some sectors, let's say, in ABS would have done more, you know. And it was something, you know, Nonoy was leading the fight. He was, as you said, he was at Boy Scout Circle in other, and all. There was a time, Christian, when he was a little bit frustrated because, as you said, there was some fear and there was, and maybe there were other considerations that people were thinking about. And Lagiane, we would almost talk almost every day, and he said, like, how do we do this? And I said, like, you know, tapos nag-decide siya, sabi ko, diretsuhin nyo lang. You don't need to wait for everybody kasi ganun naman talaga ang struggle eh. Kahit saan struggle, meron talaga mauuna, may gitna, meron talagang dito lang muna ako, sasama na lang ako pag medyo ayos-ayos na.
And
fence sitters, you know. And then that's what he said, oo, we cannot wait. Because sabi ko, because this isn't just about, while he was very passionate about ABS-CBN workers and about, he knew that this wasn't just about ABS-CBN. This was about the country. So talagang tinulak nila. And I must say that I also saw how the rank and file and the reporters of ABS-CBN, you know, started gaining strength and showing their passion. And I thought that was... that was brave of many, because we do know that at a certain time, people felt rocking the boat could just jeopardizing. And I know that at one time I just said, like, you know, what jeopardy are we talking about? You're staring a madman with a big gun, you know. Wala, anong jeopardy pa ang pinag-uusapan natin?
Okay, John.
I don't think there's anything more we could have done. I want to point out that I think even within the ruling political coalition, they were not 100% sure that the president really meant it. So definitely his allies in the Senate did not go along. So even up to the very end, you had people like Soto and Pacquiao and Angara saying no. You even had Speaker Cayetano, as late as, I don't know, was it March or April 2020, offering a new franchise that would end in December 2020. In other words, extend the franchise, but only up to the end of the year. And when he said that, boy, Cayetano got beaten up in all the DDS spaces, especially in the Mocha Usun blog. For me, what that means is that these people were trying to see, you know, exactly what the limits were. But I think it became very clear. The president said something about, I'll make sure to see you out. And then, of course, the president's special aide, Bongo, spoke in the Senate and said, if I remember correctly, he said something like, kung masama kayo sa presidente, mas masama siya sa inyo. Kung mabait kayo sa kanya, mas mabait siya sa inyo. Very transactional, but also very revealing. Talagang galit sila sa ABS. So even if the president's own allies at first weren't so sure and they were trying to maneuver and they couldn't change his mind, I don't think that there was more that we could have done to reinforce the doubters and so on. Once it became clear to the ruling coalition that the president wanted this above all, nothing could be done.
I remember that statement coming from Senator Bongo, who we all know is very close to President Duterte, still acting like an aide even if he's already a senator.
Mm-hmm.
Sabi mo nga, that's very transactional, no? Pero what else that does... how did it reflect on the kind of administration we have so far in relation to press freedom? Because as far as we know, as far as we understand, if you hold a certain position in government, more so the presidency, you should be able to hold it with certain with a mantle of respect and try to put behind whatever personal issues you have with the news organization. But in this case, that was very blatant. What do you think of that, John?
Um, First, I want to say that there are some outstanding journalists in Davao, even today, even during the Duterte regime. You have the likes of Carol Argilias and so on. But the reality is many of the Davao press just fell in with the Duterte regime. So this sentiment expressed by Bongo really just is based on their Davao experience. That was the way they treated most of the journalists, except for the intrepid ones, the ones that they couldn't corrupt like Carol Argilias. Yeah. It was very transactional. If you write something negative about us, you know, we won't give you access, we'll get there. And then they just applied it to the national level. So when he was explaining why the president felt bad about ABS-CBN, in those terms, I think that was very revealing. They were thinking, applying the Davao template to the national scale. Can you imagine that? It sounded like, you know, the Godfather. Kung masama ka sa presidente, mas masama siya sa'yo. What kind of principle is that? It's just, yun, nakakatakot talaga.
Especially in a democracy.
Especially na...
Parang yun yung sinasabi ko, Inday. Parang there's very little understanding of how the news media, how the press is supposed to work in a democracy.
As John said, with all due respect to our friends in Davao, ilang dekada si Duterte sa Davao. Nasanay siya na parang meron bang lumalabas na parang masama sa kanya? Parang wala eh. And here's what I remember most. Remember that really controversial press con even before he sat in Malacanang, when you know he was actually justifying. I mean, somebody asked about Junpala, and you know that was the first time he was justifying and saying na bakit kung journalist ka hindi pwede mamatay. You know he was doing that. And right after that, I was so surprised when I saw some Davao reporters and some politicians for that matter interpreting Duterte, saying, no, this is what he means. And I go like, is this what has been happening for decades? That he says anything, and then what comes out is ano yung interpretation, the nice interpretation, which means have the press been censoring him for his sake for the longest time?
Mm. Okay, but I don't know whether you guys would agree with this, but do you think it took time really for members of the media, including those from ABS-CBN, to really come together to find that, for lack of a better term, intestinal fortitude to deal with this looming threat coming from President Duterte and his allies? If so, why do you think it took us a while?
Sometimes it's really difficult to look at something when it's right in your face. And, you know, we come up with all sorts of rationalizations. It is very difficult to think that someone who was elected president will actually wield an axe against an institution like the Free Press. So I think there might be different thresholds here. People might give them a chance. I certainly held on to that old honeymoon tradition, nothing directly confrontational in the first 100 days, which now, on hindsight, I would think is a... it's not actually a good tradition to uphold. but actually,
it was Duterte who broke that honeymoon tradition.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, he was already breaking it during the 100 days, but many of us were still saying, oh, you know, he's still finding him. It was very difficult to consider that he was actually upending the entire system. So, you know, you continue to work within... that system, you follow certain protocols. When this guy doesn't want to play chess with you, he just wants to overturn the chessboard. And you're thinking, wait, I want to move the pawn. Ganun pa yung mag-iisip. So, I mean, we have different, I think, umabot. So, even for instance, inatake yung Inquirer, inatake yung Verifiles, inatake especially yung Rappler, there were still many of our fellow journalists who said, you know, parang even up to now, this is one of my main griefs. Even up to now, there are fellow journalists who think this is just another administration. So, parang weather lang. In fact, I did read someone, a journalist, say that just last week, weather lang to. No, it's just his time. When in fact, we shouldn't think of it that way. I mean, he's already, he shouldn't be compared to the administrations of Gloria, Era, Ramos, and Cory, because he should be compared to the administration of Marcos, who tried to undermine everything.
Let me ask first regarding the identity of that journalist. Was he or she really a journalist in the first place?
Yeah.
Inda, your thoughts on this? I mean, why did it take us long to somehow gather together behind this common cause? When in fact, this was not a new threat. Diba? John mentioned what Duterte had been doing and saying against Rappler, against the Philippine Daily Inquirer, against Verifiles. Was it fear?
I think partly, well, fear. I always like to say, Christian, that we, the media, we don't exist in a vacuum. No, we're actually a reflection of the society that we survey, warts and all. No, so including economic interests to protect, including political alliances, and everything. John was right. It had been a pattern, and I've had people tell me, sobra ka namang ano, when they say na, I think, here's the thing, I think a lot of people just belittle Duterte, that, you know, he was this promdi who didn't have a grasp of governance, who was a buffoon, and from the start, I always said, everything there is deliberate. Bantay kayo. But yun eh, whether it's ABS-CBN or it's any other media institution or the media industry as a whole, ang daming levels naman ng actions and decision making natin. What's at stake? What do we have to lose? Many of us will think press freedom, bayan. Many of us will think our pockets, our economic interests. And that's the way it is in this country. So yung pwedeng lumarga to protect the interests of people and country should do so while gently talking, as I think Nonoy did, those who may have feared because they had other considerations in mind. And that's the way politics has always been in this country. There are those of us who need to stick our necks out and try to understand and yet push those who may be more fearful of stepping out.
Okay. First, I'd like to read a tweet from former Bayan Muna Congressman Teddy Casino. Some side the criticism Duterte gets in the media's proof that press freedom is alive. Well, it's alive despite Duterte's threats and intimidation. Truth is, most media outlets have been cowed into acquiescence. So, do you guys agree? Ano yan, di ba? Napapag-usapan lagi yan. The fact that we're able to talk about this issue openly now on national TV, we can basically talk about a lot of criticism about the current administration in relation to its actions against press freedom. But is it correct to say that because of these things, we are still free? John?
Yes, I hear that a lot, no? Especially to those from those sympathetic to the administration. What are you talking about? You can continue writing your column. You can continue talking to Christian Esguerra about this and that. I think that we should understand the threat to press freedom in a different way. We are not looking at press freedom's future or fate as a matter of collapse. As in, one day, as in 1972, there are no more newspapers and TV and radio. Rather, we should look at the threat to press freedom in terms of erosion. No? sometimes the erosion is substantial, even spectacular, as in the case of the shutdown of ABS-CBN. So someone who lives on a house where the ground has been eroded might think, well, if I'm staying in this corner, you know, that's fine. Okay lang. But if they're staying in that corner where there's no more solid ground, I think they will feel the effects. So I think that would be the first thing that I would say. One is, I think we need to better understand what the threats to press freedom are. No, an attack on one journalist like Maria Ressa, an attack, the shutdown of an entire TV network like ABS-CBN, are attacks on the entire free press.
Okay, I'd also like to read a comment from journalist Virgel Santos. He's watching us. The quality of press freedom is measured not by how freely journalists are able to report on and criticize the government, but by what happens to them after exercising that freedom. I think it's very, very clear, no? Let's now talk about how this shutdown of ABS-CBN has actually affected the way we do journalism here in the Philippines. The impact, the chilling effect across newsrooms. Inday.
Christian, from Diaco, galing ako sa probinsya, I've been to many places where ABS-CBN lang ang signal na naano. Yun ang sinasabi. This isn't just about a station. This is about people who need up-to-date, vetted, independent information so that they make good decisions about their lives. When we're talking disasters, when we're talking, sabihin na natin politics, when there is no independent critical voice, you know, to give the news to the people, the death, the murder, as Jen said, of one platform is easily filled in, and into that vacuum will be those who benefit from the silencing of one entity. And alam natin yan. So that's very real. Paano pa sa panahon na, you know, they're swarming all over with this information, just one platform that tries to vet and tries to report the news critically, just the death of that one entity is a tragedy, actually, to democracy.
Okay, how about the self-censorship issue? Are you guys seeing that? Are you feeling that in newsrooms, John?
I think that maybe now it's time to start talking not just of a chilling effect, but of a freezing effect. I think for some of the smaller newsrooms, maybe also some of the bigger newsrooms who have more to lose, so to speak, they look at ABS-CBN as a cautionary example. I'm reminded of what Duterte did to PhilWeb. Very early in his term, out of the blue, we just started saying I'm not in favor of online gaming, started attacking PhilWeb. In a couple of weeks, PhilWeb's stock price lost 75% of its value. And then here comes Greggy Araneta, buys out Bobby Ongpin. And then a few days after that, the president says, well, I'm not so close to the idea of online gaming. I think what happened there was that really struck fear in the business community because people knew that there was really no underlying issue. Turns out there was no long-standing issue with Bobby Ongpin or with online gaming. They just happened to target it. And I think that the very fact that that happened, the lack of rationality, I think really just cost the business community. And of course, our owners are part of that business community. So, you know, that there's an impact.
John, I have a question, but I hope I'm not putting you on the spot here. Mm-hmm. I know that some of your columns had not seen light in the print edition, but you decided still to share them online. Okay?
Baliktad. Yes.
Okay, baliktad. Okay. Lumalabas sa print pero sa online hindi. Okay? Is that a manifestation of this chilling or freezing effect under this current regime?
It's more of a manifestation of what I would call the disintegration of the newsroom. We had an integrated newsroom, print and online were together. But I think sometime in 2018, the decision was made to split it again. So now you really have two separate newsrooms calling the shots. And unfortunately, sometimes, although it hasn't happened in the last 2 months or so, the online edition prefers not to run my piece. Is that a reflection on management pressure online? I'm not sure. It's possible. I've asked around. I don't have any answers to my satisfaction. But I did ask around. I asked my colleagues, my friends, and said, what should I do? And said, well, you know, just the newspaper, which is still the main platform, continues publishing you. You do it, and then you publish yourself in your blog, on your Facebook page, and so on.
A fellow journalist cited this, your case, di ba, yung nilalabas siya ng print edition, pero hindi siya nilalabas online. So it's been a number of articles. A colleague of ours, actually, I had a conversation with him recently. Parang that, according to him, that could be seen as some sort of an indictment or of how certain news owners, especially those working in the online platform, now view the print edition. Na let's say takot sila i-publish yung column ng isang columnist like you, they can afford to have it published sa print kasi limited yung magbabasa, unlike online.
Bukay ganun. Kasi hindi lang si John.
Yes.
Oh, marami pa nga. Tama.
Yes, no Montalban also. But also there have been some news stories. But if that is the calculation, I think then they are coming up with the wrong sum. Because we actually do hear a lot from the people in power who still, even in 2021, read the print edition. And of course, the print edition is also reflected in the IMQ Plus app. No, it's the online, it's a digital facsimile. I'm not just saying that. I actually have heard from senators arguing with me about certain columns, and the columns did not run online. So I assume they read it in print or on INQ Plus. So if that were the calculation, then I think the numbers are all wrong.
Okay. Inday, do you think after what happened to ABS-CBN, do you feel a greater sense of fear among newsrooms still at this stage of the Duterte administration? Or somehow do you see them regaining their bearing somehow?
Hindi. There's a real fear, Christian. I've been talking with colleagues, usually editors, as John says, especially in the more vulnerable, smaller papers. No? Like this, sinasabi, because it's not just Duterte, by the way. It's like yung sinampulan raw ang ABS-CBN, and they know raw na itong buong government, the different agencies, the different heads of agencies, kapag nalaman raw na may displeasure against a particular newspaper, sunod-sunod raw yan eh, ang pressure eh. So they're afraid what? They're afraid of the ads, they're afraid of the special projects. Because let's face it, especially in the time of pandemic, when everybody is scrambling because like there are no ads, people can't go out and buy, they don't have the resources. A lot of the smaller papers actually depend a lot on government revenue also. Okay. And three at least have told me actually na whenever there was something na nasulat na hindi nagustuhan, and these are usually op-eds, they'd get a call and say, pare, wag naman, baka kasi mapikon si, tapos mahirapan tayo mag-justify ng tulong sa inyo. Ganun ah. And that's what John says, mafia ba ito? Ang tulong sa inyo. Like, yun ang transactional talaga na hinahammer dun sa mga tao.
In terms of coverage, John, do you see that the chilling effect or freezing effect in the output even of ABS-CBN and other news organizations. For example, other broadcast networks, other newspapers, other digital platforms. Nararamdaman ba natin ngayon yun? Para bang yung chilling effect, hindi lang sa newsrooms, lumalabas na sa mismong produkto. Kumbaga, nagiging too careful to a fault kasi takot magkamali at takot mapag-initan.
We can just take a look at the recent and untimely death of the late of the former president Noynoy Aquino. There were many laudatory articles about him, but I think that there was a real effort on the part of many newsrooms to sort of balance those laudatory articles. I think that's one reason why our colleagues in GMA got a lot of flack. They ran a story about the shortcomings of the second Aquino administration, I think on the eve of his funeral. And they were forced to the next day to point out that they had published other stories that were more laudatory. I think that in a way, there is a... there is a renewed attempt to balance the coverage, make sure that if you're hitting with one hand, you know sort of giving with the other. I think that would be a preliminary reflection on my part.
Ano namang connection ng coverage dun sa funeral or sa legacy nung nakaraang pangulo dun sa kasalukuyang pangulo? I mean, that's my question. What do you think, John?
I think it's important. Inda, I mentioned that part of the context today is organize this information. I mean, that's a very real part of the context. And one of the main, we can call it meta narratives of disinformation, is that the entire EDSA experiment was a failure. So anything to do with EDSA, anything to do with Aquinos, that's favorable, is not in fact favorable to the Duterte camp. So for instance, the out of the blue last year there was an attempt to rename the Ninoy Aquino International Airport just to the Manila International Airport, and it was, I think this was led by Paolo Duterte. Then I think, and I read that as another attempt to push that meta-narrative that the years from 1986 until 2016, the 30 years, were a failure. So, you know, it's time to get it. So it's very important. So even the president had to say something nice about President Aquino, but, you know, he didn't show up. There's so many other things. But you can also see that what was happening in the background, online, on their blogs, on their social media accounts, they're already hitting at the Aquino legacy.
Okay. Finally, let's go to the lessons from this dark episode in our history here in the Philippines. Again, the shutdown of the biggest news, of the biggest broadcast network in the Philippines on free TV and free radio. In diverse, let's talk about the lessons that should be drawn out of this. Because this cannot be a conversation that is limited to the past, no? Puro hindsight. What should be done next?
One is we should never take threats to press freedom, you know, sitting down. We should, let's not give them an inch, no? Whatever considerations, other considerations there are, you can pursue those considerations without letting up, you know, without letting up on our stand on press freedom. And not just stand there, sabi ko nga eh, when we say like hold the line, and I love hold the line, rappers hold the line, but you know, it's not enough to hold the line when people like this rule. We should push and push and push, because increasingly they're trying to crowd us in. And the only response to that is really push and get out of the enclosed space that we're in.
Okay, John.
I'm glad that Inday focused on the press freedom perspective. That frees me up to focus on the political aspect. I'd like to say two things. First is that I think it is too early to say that this shutdown of ABS-CBN was a complete victory for Duterte. I think that the 2022 elections, the ABS-CBN shutdown might prove to be a factor. It might prove to be a factor in the sense that ABS-CBN, when it had its TV and radio networks, was a kingmaker. Now, there are many members of the Senate, former and incumbent, who owe their careers. And I'm talking about the three senators from the Cayetano family, Rene, the father, Pia, and Alan, who owe their presence in the Senate to the fact that they worked in ABS-CBN, and ABS-CBN's machinery highlighted their profile. So now you have, I think what's happening now is that they're beginning to realize, some of the more ambitious politicians in the Duterte circle, like Nograles, like Roque, they're beginning to realize that there is no way for them to win a Senate seat without the presence of an ABS-CBN. GMA is not a kingmaker. They have never been. But ABS certainly is. So now I think you're beginning to see that the lack of ABS-CBN's TV and radio reach as a factor. Conversely, there's also the reality that the 70 congressmen who voted to reject the franchise up to now are not officially named, yeah, because they know that they might be targets of a public reprisal. So that's my first point. My second point is more specific to the renewal of the franchise. I think that we should all focus on, we should all ask candidates for the House, the Senate, and the presidency, do you support a new franchise for ABS-CBN? At the very least, put them on record. I think that, in fact, the ABS-CBN issue is the single most, is the single worst scandal that hit Duterte, or in Duterte's term. Of course, you know, the pandemic response, that's an ongoing scandal. The EJ case, ongoing scandal. But in this case, I think that people up to now are still outraged, and it should be used as a battering ram against political ambition.
Okay. John Nery and Ms. Inday Varona, thank you guys for joining us this evening. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Christian.
Thank you.
And before we go, ABS-CBN's franchise denial is still making waves online nearly a year after it took place. On Twitter, some netizens are using the hashtag Ibalik ang ABS-CBN or Bring Back ABS-CBN and Kapamilya Forever ahead of the anniversary of the failed franchise bid. Others are still optimistic that the network can eventually return to free television. Just last week, one of the hashtags also became the top trending topic on the platform and even reached the worldwide lists as fans vowed to support ABS-CBN through its broadcast crisis. ABS-CBN is a parent company of this news channel. So that's it for this episode. This has been your host, Christian Esguerra. You can watch this episode again on iWantTFC or listen to our podcast on Spotify. Now, for recaps and other exclusive content, subscribe to the ANC YouTube channel and catch up with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. See you again on Monday after the fact.